called that KMA when someone
could be like Wayne's World. You should, man.
Oh. Hello, I'm Douglas Kretz. This is another edition of the Microsoft BizSpark Show. This is where we talk to leading entrepreneurs, bootstrapped entrepreneurs, successful investors, and their families sometimes about what it takes to make it in the tech sector, especially in the startup world. We're talking to actually three people. We have two people in the studio today. Jordan Sims, who's the founder of Tappin2, and Michael Jacobs, who is his technical guru. And also, both of them are BizSpark members, so they'll be talking about how they got onto Azure and how they developed Tappin2. And then on the Skype call today, we have a guy named Chance Barnett, and he is CEO. And are you co-founder or founder of Crowdfunder?
Co-founder and CEO.
Co-founder and CEO of Crowdfunder. And that's a new crowdfunding platform, as you can tell by the name. And he's going to be talking about his serial entrepreneurialism. And he's going to be talking about some of the lessons he's learned in raising money and trying to score with investors to get his stuff off the ground. So broadly, welcome, Jordan and Michael. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks for having us, Doug.
You're welcome. Let's get started actually with Chance, because he's calling in from Seattle. And this is a very new platform that you've put together and you're running. What does it do, and why have you decided to jump into this space where there are obviously several competing interests in, you know, providing equity for investors or providing funding for startups?
Sure. Well, the reason I'm here, the reason I would do this is because I've been an entrepreneur several times over. I've had incredible experiences founding companies, bootstrapping them myself, and creating successes there. And I've also raised money and had successful businesses, and I've had failures. And so one of the things that I was really passionate about 2.5 years ago was the idea that entrepreneurs could have an easier time and a more level playing field for the fundraising process, the process of finding investors. And so I actually got involved in a legislative effort in about mid-2011 that became a portion of what was called the Jobs Act. And so it was during that process with a couple of guys who I had been talking to that I knew from the LA technology scene. We ended up creating Crowdfunder to really leverage that new policy, the new legislation that we were a part of. And then launched live. At that time, there wasn't the ability for us to do investment transactions with investors. So we were really a network for investors and entrepreneurs at the time, just to meet and connect. And we powered things like pitch events, bringing actual communities together. So I'm doing this because I really feel like I want to help entrepreneurs, but it's fantastic that I also get to shape them. I get to mold them and help investors discover them.
That's cool. And let me ask you questions like the ones that, the numbers that people care about. How much money have startups been able to raise on this platform? Or, I mean, and how long has it been on? I mean, has it been only live for a few months or just a month?
So we've had live investment operations for a little over 90 days now. We've helped close 9 deals within that time. Those deals in aggregate are just shy of $20 million, of which a portion of the funding was already in. So part of our model right now is oftentimes we can help accelerate quickest some of the entrepreneurs who already have a few investors in and that have helped validate that company.
Okay.
And so what we're seeing right now is the crowd acting as a really great follow-on, but the crowd can also entirely fund people as well.
That's great. Now we'll get back into some of the advice that you might have for particular companies, but let's jump over then to Jordan and talk about his specific company and what it does first of all.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, Tappin2 is a mobile platform for content and game day producers to engage fans to put butts in seats at sporting events and increase per fan spending.
Yeah. So when we talk about this and we talk about the space, basically what your app does is it's trying to find revenue channels for, the way I understood it when I was looking at your Tappin2 website and the app, is if you're at an event and you're trying to get people to, you're trying to generate sales, it all happens in a social way on the phone.
Exactly.
So can you explain, maybe, I don't know if the technical guy, Michael, wants to explain, maybe you'll just talk about the Azure stuff, but do you want to explain sort of where the missed opportunity is for a lot of these companies? Because it's, when I looked at you sent me an investor's deck, and it said something about you had a lot of competing companies in the space, but it looked like they all focused on one particular area, but they didn't try to holistically unite the game experience with fan engagement, social engagement, and then buying things and then generating revenue for the team,
yeah,
or the arena, or yeah, the, or the ground. Can you explain how you're tackling this program?
Sure.
Problem exactly?
Well, for us, we're big sports fans to start off, right? Yeah. So we, you know, we love soccer, we love baseball, basketball, football. This guy really loves hockey as well. So anything that you can attend, we're going to all the time. And for us, the problem we saw was, you know, we're always waiting, right? You're waiting in line for food. You're waiting in line to in your car to get there a lot of the time, right?
3 hours.
We're
or
in
so,
LA, so we drive a lot, you know. You're waiting for the bathroom. You're waiting for everything.
Yeah.
And we all know at live sporting and entertainment events, right, food is just an integral part of that experience, right? You, when you take me out to the ball game, right,
you know. Buy me some peanuts.
Peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Michael, you want to sing it?
You want to sing too?
No, you don't. Okay.
So, yeah, so what happens? So you use the phone as a way of connecting to your food or your sales opportunity right away? Or?
Well, people are going to spend money, right? A part of this experience, you've already bought the ticket, but you're eating food, you are buying merch while you're there, whether that's a jersey, a pennant, something, right? Yeah. You know, something to represent the team. And there's no easy way to do that right now without waiting. And so we wanted to, as fans, first, we saw that as a problem. We already are coming to spend that money. And so we are a business-to-business company, right? And then our clients, the sports teams, then, right, work with their fans directly.
Right.
And what we saw was we needed to help the sports venues, the teams, the brands, to be able to monetize their fans that are already coming to spend this money. We wanted to just give a really simple way for the teams to allow their fans to buy the things they already want to buy.
So what happens now, right? What happens now is you go to a basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
Your point of sale opportunities are, as you're winding your way up to the seats and maybe you pass by a merchandising booth, or it's like 3 minutes left in the half and or the half is over, and you're still standing in line getting a hot dog. But they're like natural breaks that are happening in the sports. Are you saying that you're trying to create opportunities where they can keep buying at different moments in the game so that they're not being taken away from the game? Or is it a place of, I mean, how does that work exactly?
So that's exactly it. We want to make halftime all the time.
Okay.
Right. So 20%.
So this is your pitch.
This is
we
my pitch.
I'm getting
my pitch.
Okay.
We want to make halftime.
Tell me what's going on with this thing.
All the time. So fans right now are going on about 2.2 food runs per game, right? But they have to wait about 45 minutes. And do you want to wait for that food, right? No, you don't. So now from your seat, you could order any merchandise or any concessions that you want. And you can, depending upon where you're sitting, you can either have it delivered to you or you can have it delivered to your home. If it's food, you can also go and pick it up at a grab-and-go line.
Okay, so this is as a system works within the building itself. How does this work technically? So you're on Azure. You've put this on Azure. Is there anything technically you can tell us without diving too deep into the weeds about how all of this sort of weaves together? How would an arena put up this kind of system, or how would this work?
Well, it's a complicated system, of course.
Yeah, I imagine it is. I'm going to take notes.
From a 100,000-foot level, Azure, it connects to iOS and Android platform devices, which the fans bring into the arena. We set up the arena with Wi-Fi connectivity and just create a robust connected environment that's what I like to call a pop-up community within the venue. So we have the patent on in-venue social networks.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So you actually have a patent for this stuff.
Yes, we do.
So do the people who are running the concessions also have to run this app themselves as well? Or is it more of a point-of-sale interface?
So the
like a standard, you know, like they have a tablet with on the
exactly
cashier,
right. Exactly, they have their own app that they log into and use as just a live menu of opportunities or food items for the fans. And we have a system which I'm not going to talk about now that identifies the hot trending topics in social media and automatically gives our customers the knowledge of what they should sell right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you're actually, you're bringing two customers actually into the mix, basically. Well, that's pretty, how do you, I heard you say that you set up the actual arena with Wi-Fi connectivity. Aren't there arenas that already have Wi-Fi connectivity? You're not actually going there and installing wire and equipment, are you?
Most arenas don't have good Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And if the arena does not have Wi-Fi, we can actually come in and connect the entire stadium.
So part of our value add is, yeah, I mean, this is a turnkey solution for stadiums to really get butts in the seats, right? Provide Wi-Fi for people and make it easy for them to connect with their fans, their favorite players, in ways that don't exist right now.
Yeah. What are some things that you had to come across when you were trying to develop this? Because this isn't as simple as a basic consumer app where I just have to open my phone, I put in my login credentials, and I start buying things through the phone. I mean, there seems to be other levels to this, because I'm at, you know, with arenas and stuff, there's usually a RFP like a process, right, where you're competing against other vendors. So I guess you're positioning yourself as completely different than the other vendors who might do, I guess, a suite service of Wi-Fi and social and stuff like that.
Well, some of the competitors in the space really focus on point of sale technology, right? So I'll give you the two areas here. So some from the league level, right, hockey, baseball, basketball, football, they all have their own apps at the league level. Some of the teams do, but the majority of them don't, right? They have websites and things, but not an app. At the league level, these apps, though, don't drive purchasing in any way. It's you really have to go back to the main website to do any kind of purchasing. And then if you're at the game, the app doesn't do very much either. If you sometimes, depending upon the league, like I know NBA, for example, they have Game Time, and it gives you, for a fee, of course, it gives you different views, you know, of instant replays or something like that. But there's no real way for me to get merch. There's no real way for me to get any food, you know, or connect with any fans here at the game. And then some of the, on the startup side, some of the competitors really are, again, about the point of sale hardware. So they would be something similar to payment processing is really what they do. And maybe that's a big device that's at a kiosk, or it could be a little tablet.
So it's a really siloed industry where people are just attacking it from very specific angles, and you're going to try to go in and kind of bridge the gap between two different sides of that market.
So we are. We are.
So the infrastructure side and the connecting merchandise providers with teams and the arena, and then the whole Wi-Fi connectivity thing.
Well, we found that it was, we needed
to be.
Wait,
hold on. Do you think investors think that you're doing too much then? I mean, have you had these conversations with investors? I mean, do they think, well, you're trying to tackle too many pieces of the market, or?
We have. We've been meeting with investors for about the past month. We just started fundraising, and you know, actually, it's been the opposite. They've asked, okay, well, you know, do the stadiums have Wi-Fi? And when we say that the majority of them don't, because
they're
surprised. Old, they were surprised.
And then we said, surprised. Well, I really thought. I mean,
No.
I thought every stadium must have already
figured
this out.
I mean, other than the new 49ers stadium, right? They're going to have a new Oakland A's stadium.
Yeah.
Cowboys have a new stadium. Most teams across sports have been in their stadium for, you know, over 15 years, right? And Wi-Fi is really, Wi-Fi everywhere is a very new phenomena.
Yeah, and it's a huge problem, too.
Huge problem.
It is not a good service. It's not customer friendly. And sometimes it costs a lot of money.
Well, that's the big problem.
Yeah.
And I mean, Mike can speak more about this, but it costs over $1 million typically for a stadium where you're, you know, seating in excess of 10,000 people. I mean, that's really cost prohibitive. But our partnership with Cisco has allowed us to provide that at lower cost.
Oh, wow, that's good. So why did you choose to build all this stuff on Azure, besides being someone who I know to be a fan of the Microsoft ecosystem and the stack? What were the kind of technical challenges that you thought Azure was going to solve for you?
Well, you know, we just, my other technical co-founder and I, we grew up in .NET and in the Windows environment, and it was just a great way to grow with Azure too. And BizSpark provides a great service to new startups that are looking to develop any sort of app or website, and Azure, having Azure for free was a for the first couple years was a great a great promotion.
Well, I know you're nervous, so don't be nervous telling me this, because this I'm sure is every technical co-founder's dream. What are the things that were easy about using Azure? I mean, for people out there also who are looking into doing this stuff.
Well, honestly, it has a great user interface, a great dashboard. If when you log in, you at a glance, you see all of the options, and you get a great view of what's going on. And comparing to like AWS, the analytics, the dashboard that you see, the Azure is actually far simpler to use.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's good to know. The easier you can make
these.
Well, for you, yeah. But do you think that people who didn't grow up in .NET and other things like that, do you think that they would be, they would easily kind of
so the
glom on to what's going on?
That you guys loaded a couple months ago is just beautiful.
Yeah. So, yeah. Awesome. Well, the Windows Azure team will be happy to hear that.
They've done a good job.
We'll make sure that they hear that. So why would you turn to something? You did turn to Crowdfunder as a way of sourcing for money. Why did you turn to them? I mean, and how has that experience been so far?
Well, we just launched our crowdfunding campaign. So if you go to crowdfunder.com, you will see us featured on the homepage.
Okay, I'll write that down.
You can write that down. Everybody can visit and check out our deal. So we've been bootstrapping. We've been around for a couple of years, and we've been bootstrapping with our own resources. And to really accelerate our growth, we wanted to, you know, do some equity raises. And we looked around at different platforms, and you know, we don't have a lot of high net worth individuals in our immediate network.
Mm-hmm.
So Crowdfunder was a great platform, we thought, to really get access to these individuals and really be able to tell our story. We also like the ways that we can control who has access to our you know, private documents as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that was really
important. So there's a little bit more of control there. How is it different than AngelList, for example? I mean, in terms of finding exposure to investors, I know that this is, mm-hmm. they're not the same thing, but do you find that it also brings a little bit of transparency into the process, though? It helps you understand what people think about your product. You kind of get a good interaction with the people who are looking to fund you. I mean, do you get...
Talk about that. Well,
this guy's a really great technical...
I know,
technical,
he's really,
you
really...
You talk.
Right,
he lets the marketing guy talk.
He's like, go
happens.
For it.
Go ahead.
For it. Well, you know, in just looking at sites like Early Shares or AngelList, you mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, for us, the thing... Control and access were very important. Mm-hmm. So Crowdfunder has a very good network of investors. They also allow you to control who sees it by region. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're an LA startup. There's a really big scene coming on in LA. And also sports, right? And Crowdfunder allows you to really filter who you're hitting and the type of investor. So we're mobile, we're B2B, we're SaaS. You know, the ability to really control who you hit was important to us.
Chance, are you still there? Did you go out and get coffee or anything?
Only my mind. I'm still here.
Okay, good. You guys have been up for about 90 days. What's the experience been like? I mean, any hiccups or is everything going smoothly?
So we've actually been up for a year and a half, but because of regulatory concerns, we didn't launch investing.
Oh, right, because of the...
So we have a network of about 37,000 investors and entrepreneurs. We've done localization contests in 9 different markets, including LA, which is where I live, and I've done many startups there. So I do have a great network. Our company has a great network of investors and entrepreneurs in LA. And we also have the ability, because of that, to rapidly help entrepreneurs like Jordan and what they're doing connect with the community. And oftentimes, if you look at the trends in angel investing, early stage companies, it's not just throw something up on the web and let's see who's going to take a look and throw dollars at it. Mm. It's really being a part of an ecosystem. And so I know Jordan understands this really well. He was someone who really fostered a lot of that in LA around one of his past roles as a community manager. So it's really important that you bring people together, not just in a virtual space, but in local ecosystems. And so that's been one of our big approaches, and I think a good differentiator from someone like AngelList, who has a lot of great investors. We have investors too, but we really focused on localizing that and helping people in other ecosystems that aren't just Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. And getting them connected into their network more so.
Do you think that this kind of thing is actually also going to help people? I mean, you picked up on a key thing that I think is great for people that people like Jordan know very well, is that you don't know who you need to know until you actually get out there and start meeting them.
Right.
And there really is no ecosystem until those people start meeting with each other, right?
Right.
LA, we were talking about this earlier before the show started, and I'd love to get, you know, Chance, you're also based in LA. How has this scene changed in LA from, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago? You know, and how would you see something like Crowdfunder boosting that or changing that scene in some way?
Yeah, so, you know, it's been interesting in the last 15 years, LA's gone from a backwater that had what I would say.
LA is a backwater?
Yeah.
For investment. Right. Exactly. Okay. I just want, because they do a couple of things well. Sunshine and movies, right? Just go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you.
Backwater with the myopic filter of technology investing.
Okay.
So I'll qualify this much better. If you're finding money for a film, very different story. It has been harder, and there's been a dearth of capital in LA for not just technology ventures, but really game-changing things, very ambitious projects. So there have been a lot of companies getting funded that do great ad technology, for example. But these are often the investment and return model that oftentimes you could just raise debt. Mm-hmm. If you want to raise money in the past for something that was game-changing and transformative and really took on some big incumbent industries, say like sports marketing and who's marketing the venues as a relevant topic, you needed to raise that money oftentimes up in Silicon Valley. So what we've seen, it didn't just happen in the last 2-3 years, but that's the beauty of how ecosystems develop, that the foundation has been laid over 15-20 years for now capital to be flowing enough to fund great entrepreneurs, for there to be a great network of angel investors and early stage venture capitalists,
right,
and entrepreneurs that have enough talent and engineering talent to really come together and to make something robust. And so we're really seeing that start to light up in the last 2-3 years in LA. And there's a huge amount of people moving down from Silicon Valley, investors and entrepreneurs. And I think there's something really unique about LA. It's very collaborative, first of all. It's a little dispersed, which is kind of a challenge. But there's a really unique mix of talents and experience. And so you guys were touching a little bit on the idea of sports. There's an insane mix of media and entertainment in LA, and we're seeing a lot of great companies growing and getting funded and really breaking out there. We didn't see those big industry leading growth type companies as tech companies earlier, and so we're starting to see that now. What we're really focused on and excited about doing is helping through our unique local approach and framework that we call Crowdfund X. That we essentially liken that to a quarterly accelerator, where we create visibility and funding opportunities for local entrepreneurs via the web, but it's localized to Los Angeles and right at this moment about 9 other cities around the globe. But we're working to expand that. So what we're seeing in LA is that we're doing the work of helping entrepreneurs who might not have that really rich investor network already have an on-ramp to plug into their local ecosystem and get visibility and compete. And if they're deserving, if they're creating great traction, they're doing a lot of the right things, they can find where to meet those people and they can get involved.
This feels to me like one of the great new waves in investing, because, I mean, if there's anything that LA does well, is as you said, it's got the media, it has the ability to market things. There's a great understanding of how to put people out there to get attention for them. And I'm just wondering, I kept thinking about what kind of companies are joining this crowdfunder platform.
So we're a little bit broader than, say, an AngelList. AngelList is, I would say, really just for tech startups.
Okay.
And oftentimes, I would say they're a little bit more investor-centric. So if you don't have a great lead investor, if you don't already know one of these folks or getting money from them, it's pretty hard to get started and to get much attention. And that's also a focus of them having a lot of people there. And it's really investor-driven, the process. Mm-hmm. What we're focused on, and I would like to think I'm more the entrepreneur's entrepreneur. Crowdfunder is very entrepreneur-centric. We're focused on a set of services and a platform to help early-stage entrepreneurs find that early community, to grow it prior to fundraising, and then to connect into their local network and our investor network and start to gain traction that way. And then providing some of the services in the process that helps them understand how to get there. Half the challenge for fundraising is starting to understand what you don't really know about it. And then once you have the momentum and all of the pieces in place, really start to turn on the afterburners. And
I'm gonna get back to you, Chance, and ask you some other questions about that, about the future of this kind of enterprise and this kind of fundraising environment. But as a community manager, Jordan, we got to this a little bit earlier about being the offline and the online and getting into that ecosystem and developing it. How do you see something like this changing the offline world that you've been living in, trying to develop a company and trying to get to know these investors and get to know this network? I mean, for someone in your shoes who takes on the co-founder role, how do you think things are going to change, and how have they changed in the time that you've been in LA and trying to do this kind of work?
Well, I think, you know, Chance touched on some really important pieces. So, you know, my previous work, while we started the company a couple years ago, I was also the community manager at a co-working space.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say
that. I did it. See, we were joking. I did it again.
We talked about this earlier.
That's why it happened.
So
at a co-working space in Little Tokyo called the Hub LA.
Okay.
And so, you know, that was my job, was to foster community and really connect entrepreneurs to resources, whether that was interns, you know, staff, money, whatever they were really in need of. And so we were also beginning our company at the same time. And we'd been around for a couple months, actually, by that point. We're really pushing on the product. And, you know, I think there was really not a lot of information around investment in particular in LA. So there was... there had been, you know, accelerators coming online, but other than that, you really didn't get any information. So you, if you were looking for resources, if you were looking for training, if you were looking for really development structure, it didn't exist. It just wasn't there at all. You know, and so when we started the company, Mike was living up here in the Bay. Our other co-founder is in Israel, and then I was in LA. And I was coming up here all the time. Honestly, we were coming to the Valley for events constantly and to meet with investors, pitching the idea, you know, there just wasn't infrastructure in LA. And really, over the past couple of years, that has just blown up. And I think crowdfunder has been a really great part of that, with these sort of the live events that Chance was talking about. That's how we heard about them, you know, initially. You know,
well, this is why these things are good, right? Let's talk about why these things, this kind of things are good, is because it feels like, and you've seen this with marketing and you've seen this on social platforms and whatnot, the more people that you gather around you who are either like you or not like you, who are intelligent, the smarter you get to be, right? So it seems to me that you've probably benefited from this experience of LA nurturing itself as a startup scene, because you've probably been exposed to more information. I mean, is it easier for you now in this LA environment to find the mentorship and the advisors and the kind of technical or even like soft skill assistance?
I'll let
that
Mike
need?
Take that one.
Okay. Well, definitely. And we've actually amassed a team of 10 advisors to the board, which is a lot. But given the nature of our product, each advisor advises us on a different skill, whether it's from how to wire a stadium to how to best brand a sports franchise. Right, Jordan?
So let's talk about, let's get into the advice stage here, because we have, I mean, we have something like 30, I'm not even tell you how many people, it's several tens of thousands startup companies that are in the BizSpark program. What are the steps that they need to take to go finding those advisors and getting that mentorship? I mean, are there things that have worked for you that you thought are now part of your formula for building success into your company that you would recommend to other people?
So the first thing that I would say to people is open your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, if you close mouths, don't get fed, in whether you're in tech, whether you're in consumer products, people don't know you have a problem unless you tell them. And you have to be, it takes a little bit of hubris though, because you have to be, you know, we try not to take ourselves too seriously, right? We're working hard, we're giving everything we have, but knowing that it's not possible to know everything. Yeah. And so you have to build, you know, be open, go to events. There's a lot of meetups around, you know, whether that's UX, whether that's marketing, co-working spaces have events as well, and trainings. And then if you see somebody who is doing what you want to do, talk to them. And people I know in LA have been very helpful to us, just saying, hey, you know, we see you and we're really interested in this, and here's what we're doing, and what advice would you give us?
Do investors look to see if you have actually a large community of support behind you,
or, yes.
Do they really? Yeah. So this is news to me. Sometimes when I look at companies and see if they're worth investing in, or if I think they're interesting, I actually look for if they have, I don't know, an understanding of who they're selling to. But explain what you mean by that, that emphatic yes that you just
so that support equates to traction, right? That's part of building traction. Now, the most important piece of advice that I give to anybody who's planning on getting into the startup world is First of all, have about 3 years of funds to survive with.
Mm-hmm. So, and what does that mean exactly? Does that just mean like rent or enough to
everything.
Pay the bills?
It means all of that, right?
Figure
to
out
feed
what
yourself.
Your burn rate yeah. is for yourself and your company for the first 3 years, because you're probably not going to make much money for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But second, to really start talking to potential customers, which is what you brought up, mm-hmm. and to figure out whether or not the problem that you first conceived is more of a scratch for the customer and they don't care, they won't pay for it, or if you're really changing your customers' lives, making your customers' day-to-day work better.
Mm-hmm. And does going to something like Crowdfunder help accentuate or augment the need for funds, but also the support in terms of mentorship and community? I mean, everybody talks a lot about the lean startup model, and the thing that came to my mind when you were talking about this is, yeah, you have to understand what your community wants or what your consumer wants, but community is a lot different than that, right? Community is a lot different than just listening and fixing a problem and giving them something to do. Community is really about support and making friends.
Well,
right?
Exactly. And our one of our first advisors is actually one of our first customers.
Okay.
For a major sports franchise, which we can't get into online
okay.
right now.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, stay tuned with that. That's good.
Coming soon.
Maybe I'll throw this over to Chance. Are there aspects, and I don't know if you can see where I'm driving at here, Chance, but are there aspects of the crowdfunding model and the fact that it's a platform that offers control to the founder and also offers qualitative information about his or her product, are there aspects of that that can be built into the lean startup model? And have you seen people use it in that way? Or is it strictly more of a find an investor, find money kind of platform?
No, it's actually one and the same. You know, I liken crowdfund investing and fundraising that way to be one of the points of validation, and also to help amplify the points of validation or traction that you're already getting. So we find, as an interesting example, there's a variety of people who come to us looking to raise money who don't need our help raising money.
Interesting.
Of course, I love that. And so the only reason they would do that, why would they want to sign up for another social network on the web? Why would they want to invest time? The reason they want to do that is because they know that they're building community around their company in a way that does something more than just get dollars in to fund what they're doing. Generally, we end up bringing people, strategic investors, not just dollars from the crowd, quote unquote, which I think is a misconception. But we like to make sure that we spend some time taking a look at the entrepreneurs who are coming on our platform, who are building relationships, and we want to plug them into their local community. And we like each person that strategically we can connect them to. So this is also, to your earlier question, to tie things together, how do you build a great advisor network? How do you plug into your local ecosystem? In my experience, the absolute best way to do that is to start to do good things for other people. So is there a great investor or an advisor who's doing something that you could go to and not just ask, hey, will you help me? But think about value to that person. Think about what they're doing in their daily lives, which is something these guys just mentioned too, in solving a problem in someone's life for their business. How can you do that to someone to help them as an advisor? So what we're focused on is helping take a variety of different social signals and traction signals about the business. And the offshoot of that then becomes investors saying, this looks great. But at the heart of each crowdfunding fundraising campaign on Crowdfunder for investment is not a balance sheet. Yes, that's there. Yes, the P&L and return on investment matters. What's at the heart of it are the entrepreneurs, the founders here. Their profile is there. They're the ones talking about what they're doing, and it's their advisors and investors who are the strongest, most significant validation of what they've been doing, no matter what their pitch deck could say. So the people element, the offline element, is one of the most core things, and that's why it's so critical and so great that these guys really understand the value of that.
Yeah.
And I'll just add one more personal element to this, which is, I thought I was really smart when I was younger because I didn't know a lot of things I didn't know. And I think I've become smart enough to know that I'm dumb. And so I've had to learn this lesson in spades in my life, and I would hope that other entrepreneurs could save themselves some million-dollar mistakes. Get those advisors who are industry experts who have really already been there. There's no substitute for experience and for having failed in the past and known better.
Yeah.
So if you can find those people, they're going to save you years of your life and millions of dollars in time and wasted mistakes.
Well, look, this is the reason why, thank you for saying that, because this is the reason why I think everybody on the BizSpark team and the Microsoft Ventures team and the startup marketing group here at Microsoft really loves entrepreneurs. Because at the end of the day, it really isn't just about the balance sheet. It is about building a really great company that makes interaction, the interaction of people with the world a much easier thing and a much mm-hmm. better thing, and it helps people and it lifts all boats, right? So, you know, I wish you luck with crowdfunder.com. I want people to go check it out, you know, see what's going on there. Look for Tap Into on there, see if you can fund their idea, at least get to know the team a little bit better. And if anyone else out there on the BizSpark membership program wants to be a part of this show, look for us. You can tweet us at BizSpark. You can look for me at Douglas Kretz, and go to BizSpark.com for all the recent releases and offers that are going to the BizSpark members. I should also point out on Wednesday, Visual Studio 2013 is going to be released in New York, and there's going to be a live stream there. You can find the address for that live stream on our Twitter stream. We're going to be tweeting that out regularly until Wednesday, and it finishes, or the last part of it finishes at 12:15 Pacific, when Channel 9's interview group interviews all the engineers that helped build Visual Studio 2013. So if you're a geek and you like building things with
geek
Visual
out.
Studio, you could totally geek out on Wednesday. I wish you guys luck. And
thank you,
where can we find you guys on Twitter or at all? Or where? How can people get in touch with you before we let you go?
So on Twitter, I'm at Jordan Sims DW.
S-Y-M-S.
Yes, right, thank yes. you. S-Y-M-S. And then you can also go to our website, and that's www.tapinto.co.
Cool.
Yes.
.co, that's a great place to be too. A lot of startups are rushing to that platform. That's great. So Michael, thank you. Thanks for being a BizSpark member. Jordan, nice to see you. Thanks for coming up here from LA.
Thanks for having us, Doug. We appreciate it.
Yep.